Welcome, listeners, to the Afterthought podcast by Games Night App. I'm your host, Dave, and with me tonight, we have Daniel. G'day, Daniel.
Hey, how are you going?
Very well, mate. We've just played a great game of Rush Hour, so look out for that on our YouTube channel.
Yeah.
It should be up pretty soon. We'll also have a teach with that as well. This is episode 4 of our podcast, and we've got a special guest with us today. We've got Chris Bockie from No Box Games. He'll be joining us shortly to talk about his brand new game called Spies, and we're also going to talk about our PAX experience from PAX 2022 from Melbourne. We'll have Callum join us for that. Welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoy it. So today we have Chris Bockie from No Box Games. Thank you very much for joining us today, Chris. We really appreciate it. Daniel, just no worries. Thank you. Thank you so much. Daniel, do you want to ask Chris about his exciting game company?
Yeah, so Chris, can you tell me and the listeners about yourself and your new exciting game company, No Box Games?
Sure. So I'm Chris Bockie. It rhymes with hockey. I'm 40 years old. I like long walks on the beach. I got into game design in 2016 and found a passion for it really quickly. I'd always been kind of the creative type that did a lot of different things. But with games, I found just a system and a set of rules that I could really get behind. So my wife and I have been digital nomads and expats for a long time. I first kind of got the game design bug when we were living in Florida, and that was part of a road trip we were taking across North America. We then moved to Eastern Europe, where I continued to make games and play tested with the local communities as I could find them. And then when COVID hit, I was living in Warsaw, Poland. And this was a terrible time to be a game designer because everything closed down. So obviously everything went virtual. I co-created virtual playtesting with a British designer named Ian Brocklebank. And together we started the twice a week group that's still going today. It's got like 1,800 members now.
Wow.
And after all of this, I began wanting to make games myself, not just pitching them to publishers. And you see the problems of shipping and manufacturing and distribution. And about a year ago, Matthew Dunstan and Rory O'Connor came out with a game called Voyages. And this was a print-at-home game. And I remember joking with them on Facebook. I was like, you guys stole my idea, because right around the time they had talked about that, I also had a game signed that could easily be done in the same sort of print-at-home format. They were going to Kickstarter whilst mine was going to the publishers. So they beat me in the market, and their game is absolutely amazing. If you haven't played it before, you should absolutely check it out. That's Voyages, Matthew Dunstan and Rory O'Connor. But in seeing their game, I realized just how many things you can strip away. Like, what is a board game? It is not the box. It is not the store. It's not these different things. It's just the experience you have at your house, at someone else's house, at a game cafe with other people. And the paper and the bits are just the things that make it all possible. So I really liked that notion of the printed home model, because it cut out a lot of the things that make board games either more expensive or more challenging to get to the table. You know, it's not uncommon for a Kickstarter now to say, oh, we're making it now. We'll deliver it to you in a year and a half's time. Or worse, this is a $40 game, and it's going to cost you $60 in shipping to get it. And that's assuming, of course, everything works the way it's supposed to. Nothing gets held in customs or whatever. So with the printed home model, I realized that there's a lot of opportunities to make games quickly and deliver games quickly to the people in a very direct sort of fashion. Very few middlemen need to be involved here. So with No Box Games, I have two partners in this business. One of them is Christian Fosch. He is the artist and graphic designer extraordinaire. I also have Rocky De Leon, who is our marketing person, and he's helping with a lot of the Kickstarter pages and building an audience on Facebook and things like that.
Chris, having a look through your game, and we'll come to it in a moment, but what it really showed me was that you've, as you were saying there, you've produced everything there is in a physical copy game, physical box game. All the artwork is beautiful, it's vivid, it's, the only difference is there's no box. It's it really is an extraordinary achievement. So congratulations. So Spies is your first game for No Box Games. So what can you tell our listeners specifically about Spies?
Yeah, sure. So Spies is a 2 to 6 player game. It's ages 8 and up, about 20 to 30 minutes to play. Each player gets a single copy of the main sheet of paper. You can print off a shield that will come with the digital file you get. And this just helps you block your sheet for privacy purposes. You're also welcome to use a book or anything else you might have around the house. But in Spies, each player is a spy. You have infiltrated the ambassador's mansion. You're completing missions and sabotaging missions. And you learn that there are other spies trying to do the same thing. So you're assigned to track the player on your left. So the better you can track where they are, where they go, what they do, the more points you'll score at the end of the game. So each round, you basically choose to move one or two spaces to a new room. You'll choose to complete or sabotage a mission, which is a really fancy way of saying circle an icon or X an icon. And then you'll ask your target one of the specific questions on your sheet. Now, some questions are better than others, but you can only ask each question once per game. So if you think you know where your target is, you can save one of your one of the better questions for later. But the goal of it all is to complete missions and sabotage missions and figure out where they've been as they play. When you get to the end of the game, you'll have this nice climactic moment. Were you in dun, 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 the main bedroom? Or whatever room in the mansion you like. And the closer you are to where they actually are, the more points you score. You'll also score points for the missions you completed, the missions you sabotaged, and the player with the most points wins.
So what I noticed was it was a great, really a game within a game, in that you've only got those 8 questions, haven't you? So you've got the 8 questions and really deciding about what questions do I ask first? And what do I save for later? And then there's another aspect to it, which is what missions do I want to complete, but which missions do I think the person to my left is going to complete, and therefore which ones do I need to sabotage? There's that constant process about what do I need to do for myself, but also not reveal to the person to my right what I'm doing, and so on. So exactly. It was a really good back and forth.
Yeah, and I suppose within, as content creators, we already have a copy of the game. We're super excited to give it a play. But for our listeners, Chris, how can gamers get a copy of Spies?
Yeah, so the Kickstarter for this is going to be coming in October 2022. Once the Kickstarter is over, other printed home sort of games, we'll charge the cards, we'll make sure Kickstarter gets their cut, and then we'll send an update to all the backers with a link to the digital files. From there, they are your files to print, enjoy. I'm sure some people will laminate them so they can use dry erase markers instead. That is entirely your choice on how you want to build your game. Once the Kickstarter is over, we start focusing on the next game in our lineup, which nothing to reveal on that yet. But once the Kickstarter's done, we'll have the game available for sale on noboxgames.com. And from there, you'll be able to pay for it on the website and then get the download just like the backers did.
Wonderful, Chris. We're really excited about your game. Great innovation from No Box Games, just providing really high quality board games to customers without the box. I know I'm a teacher, Chris, and so I know that this is a sort of game that would be fantastic in my classroom. Printing lots of copies for the students and having multiple games running in a classroom, it's a fantastic idea. Congratulations. Chris, if it's okay if you could just stick around for a few minutes, we've got some questions without notice we're going to try and stump you with, just about your gaming background and so on. So stick around. We're going to have a short break. And when we come back, questions without notice with Chris. with Chris Bockie from No Box Games, and we've got some questions for you, Chris. These are just some light general questions we ask our guests just to get an idea of your background as a gamer, your favourite games, and so on. So Chris, what is the most recent game you have played?
The most recent game that I've played... I actually got to play very little at Essen, for better or for worse. One of my own games, I suppose. I think it was called Taco, just a set collection game where you make tacos.
Fantastic.
That sounds like fun. If there were three words to describe you as a gamer, what would they be?
Strategic. Backstabby and chaotic.
I love it.
I love a lot of social deduction games that give you that sense of you can be evil, you can be nice. It's hard to tell which one you're trying to be sometimes. Definitely love games that give you a lot of interesting decisions to make as well.
So have you had the privilege of playing by an Australian game designer, actually, Blood on the Clock Tower? Have you had that experience yet?
I have watched it played, and the only reason I've not been able to play it myself yet is because every time I hear about the game and I go to book a slot, it's always sold out. The UK Games Expo has run it at least twice now. They ran it at Aircon in England as well, and the last time I came across it, it was 11 p.m. at the Aircon area. And I don't know how people were still like going at that hour.
I think
they were really engaged with the game.
That was actually our first time playing it. We played two or three games at a small local game meetup. And yeah, we were going until probably 11:30, but that's when we finished. That wasn't when we were starting. I'm actually quite lucky. I have the box, so it's actually now for us just a matter of getting the group together to do it. So.
Yeah. And Chris, finally, what are your favorite games?
My favorite games. I'm looking at my Calyx right now. And it does kind of vary on the day. I've got Quirkle, which is a classic gateway game for pretty much anyone. Sushi Go remains one of my favorites. Point Salad is also great. When I'm ready to get a little bit crunchy, Champions of Midgard comes to the table whenever I can.
Yeah.
But what happens more frequently, for better or for worse, as a designer, I'm in a lot of the playtesting communities, so you see a lot of amazing games that have yet to be published. It's a great way to be kind of on the bleeding edge of board games, playtesting unpublished games.
Yeah, we've just recently come back from PAX in Melbourne, and so we've just had some experiences where local game designers have been able to demo their own game, really admirable to see the amount of effort and time and commitment and dedication that they've given to their game. You know, in many cases, it's been years in development, so it's admirable, yeah.
And I suppose like we've both David and I have kids, and our eldest and youngest are actually the exact same age and mostly always in the same class. But there was actually twin girls that were in our class as well, and their dad, I actually met him at a local board session, and he's now publishing games. He's on his second game that's actually out there as well. So it's
yay.
We get to see those kind of background development, but it's kind of, you know, we peripherally see it, actually seeing it firsthand and really kind of getting into it. It's definitely kudos to you to take the time and effort to actually do that creation.
And I was impressed there to hear some of your favourite games and some of my favourite games. We certainly love. We've both got a copy of Sushi Go.
Yeah, we do.
I've got a copy of Point Salad at home. One of our other presenters on our channel, Callum, absolutely adores Champions of Midgard.
In fact, I had to print him all of the boxes. So I 3D printed him all of the box inserts because that game has terrible box inserts. But I suppose that's a thing we don't need to worry about with no box games because it's all just easy.
Exactly. It's all in one sheet of paper. And so basically with everything Novox Game is going to make, our goal is to have just printed home games, no assembly required, grab a literal handful of components or less, and you're ready to start playing. You know, think about any time you've got your friends coming over, you want to play something new, and it's 5 minutes till they arrive. If you've already got the game, you just go, right, print off the number of copies you need, or find where you stashed the dry erased laminated versions you've already made, grab some components and you're done. For this one, all you need is a pen for each player.
Yeah, such a brilliant idea. And please, you know, folks, when Spies launches very, very soon, and Chris, I'll throw to you just again to remind listeners about when Spies is launching and how they can get their own copy.
So Spies launches on Kickstarter on October 17th. We'll run the campaign for a couple of weeks. So if you search for Spies or Novox Games on Kickstarter, you'll find the link there. Once the Kickstarter is done and everything on Kickstarter goes through, we'll be sending a update to the backers to give them their digital files. And then only once that's done, we'll release it on our website as a standalone for sale product. It'll be cheaper on the Kickstarter, but we're talking, you know, $4 on the Kickstarter versus $5 on the website. So it's still cheaper and you get it first as a backer.
So listeners, please check out Spies from Novox Games launching on Kickstarter October 17. It is a terrific game. Please check it out. Thank you so much, Chris Bocchi from Novox Games, for joining us on our podcast. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, and we wish you the best of luck in your campaign and for the future of Novox Games. Thanks again.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks, Chris.
That was a great interview with Chris Bocchi. Really enjoyed that. We also had a really great day at PAX last weekend in Melbourne. And so I thought we'd have a bit of a chat about our PAX highlights. We've got Callum with us. Callum, we'll start with you, mate. What were your highlights from PAX? Now, I'm going to just preempt you by saying this. You got a big one.
Absolutely. I was very fortunate at PAXmas is what we decided to call it after I won. I was very fortunate to win a full... Allied Computer from GGWP. Just insert a plug there and hopefully they'll hear this. But yeah, they hooked me up with this incredible gaming machine, and that was exceptional.
Now tell the story. You've got to tell the story in full. You've shown me the video, but you've got to describe it to our listeners. What happened?
For you guys listening, basically I was lining up, as everybody does, to get their badge. And as I went in, there was a couple of people like, hey, sign up for GGWP. And I'm like, oh, yeah, cool. You can take my information. You can win a computer. Look, it's a really good chance to win. And I'm like, okay, man, like, all right, just send me spam. I don't care, whatever. And I tried to make sure I unclicked every box that said marketing, and my mate who was with me, Steve, he was like, yeah, this is super keen, we're gonna win. And I'm like, no, we're not, mate, it's not gonna happen. Anyway, we carry on with our merry way. We play a couple games at PAX, Grimworld, which was another one of my highlights, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. But we end up getting sucked into an RPG game, which goes for about an hour. That sucked the life out of us. We went and got some lunch. Steve goes, that's it, let's go to digital. And I was like, yeah, right, I got nothing better to do. So we went up to digital, walking through, have a chat, catch up with Dan and the crew, and for about all of 30 seconds, which delays us the 30 seconds it takes and requires, walk down this alleyway, and this man accosts me. And I don't want to just... you know, like a classic...
That's a fair statement, and accosts, yeah, you did.
He, like, reached out and grabbed your lanyard as well. It was like just a full... Hey!
Yeah, I thought he accosted me, and like a salesman at a shopping mart. Hey, man! I'm like, hey, and he's like, how you going? I'm like, yeah, no, I'm having a good day. It's about to get worse. And then he goes, hey, did you sign up for GGWP? I'm like, yep, did. He goes, can I see it? I'm like, probably not. Like, I've just been.
I think your exact words were, Why?
I was like, why? And he's like, and I'm like, well, if you don't have an answer, the answer's probably going to be no. And he goes, no, man, trust me, it's worth it. So foolishly, I'm like, yeah, here's my phone. So he goes through my phone, finds out that I have an account. At this stage, I notice there's a camera that's been filming me the whole time. And he goes, here, follow me. I follow him and he gives me a computer.
He literally walked up to you and said, here you go, this is yours.
And I almost cried. I won't lie. It's not a proud moment. There's, if you see the video, I'm just like...
I think your exact words were, sorry, what?
Sorry, what? Just, and I was flabbergasted. And then I gave the computer to someone else so I could hug a complete stranger that accosted me in an alleyway, in a walkway. And gave me a computer, so that was a pretty bit of a highlight, yeah.
And it's a sweet computer too.
Oh, it's a decent.
Let's not talk it. Yeah, let's talk it up. It's a great rig, isn't it? So yeah. Thank you to
GGWP are the people who managed to hook us up.
And hit them out with a shout out, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. GGWP, they're an organization that connects streamers and so computer streamers and board game streamers with potential companies. So the companies that are like, hey, we want to get involved in the streaming community, you want to reach out to these guys who have middle wage or middle areas, middle to wealthy. We don't know how to connect to them because they're not watching TV anymore. They watch streams. So here's, and this is GGWP's whole shtick. They're an international company, but they are also based in Australia and they're really quite nice.
Yeah, so that was a massive highlight. Now, Dan, you mentioned Grimmauld before. Mm-hmm. We'll come back to Grimmauld. Dan, what were your highlights of PAX?
I think it was actually just great seeing a lot of Melbourne-based vendors. So I would have liked to have seen more. I know there's a lot more out there. But I suppose that with digital being there, connect with some of them because obviously they're local, so we can actually have them. And when we do a board game bar for them, we can have them here and we can actually serve them a drink for their own game. Like just things like that. And there's a lot of opportunities and, walked out with pockets lighter and arms fuller, so yeah.
And you did get a lot of, very generous offers, didn't you? Like, for example, there were a number of publishers that said, hey, we'd love you to play this game and maybe you feature the game. Some of them you went, yeah, I'll have a look at that. And others you actually respectfully said, I'm not sure that's for us, but thanks anyway.
Yeah. So I think that's going to be one of the things I have to get used to is that that when they find out you're a streamer or content creator, they're like, oh, well, we'll give you a copy of the game. It's like, let's exchange cards first. And, I foolishly put a QR code on the back of my shirt so that, my card is me. But, it was that more of a, after the first few, there was a few that I said no to. And I was just like, that's, we'll reach out to you. And I got their card. hopefully they're not listening to the podcast and I haven't got in contact with them. But there was quite a few that was just like, okay, no, like I won't take a copy of the game now. You go do your research on me, make sure that, what we create and what the team do here is worth it. And it's going to match what you want. And then we'll also do the same on our side because, otherwise we're going to end up, I already had a big board game collection before I started streaming. What the hell would it look like if I took every game that came out there? And that's a common issue. Like you've got 200 odd games coming on BGG a week. Content creators can't possibly keep up with that. Even if we have all of the content creators that had good followings, which they don't, and publishers, all the best game goes, the best games go to all the best content creators, but then all of the, kind of unknown games go to the smaller ones. So I suppose it's just about that balance and finding it. So
let's talk a few games. So I managed to get a playthrough of Oriflam, which is not a new game. I'm not sure when it was published, but it may have actually been even me.
2015, I think. Now, someone not actually listening to the podcast could look and then tell me I'm wrong, but that's when I think it was.
So. Please add Daniel. Please add him. but give us an overview. What is Oriflam like?
So you start with a hand of, I believe it's 7 cards or 8 possibly out of a potential 10 or 11. So you each get your own deck of cards. For example, I was grey. Dan was yellow, I think.
Yeah, yellow or blue or something.
Every deck is exactly the same. It has exact same characters in them. For example, you've got a spy, a soldier, a...
Yeah, assassin, etc., yeah.
Yeah, so, it's sort of 11 different characters. I think it's 11. But 3 of them you burn at the start, So you always discard the first three. So you don't.
And you don't know, it's random as well.
Yeah. And you have to do them face down, so you don't even know which ones are out of your deck, or nobody else does either. And then all you simply do is in a row, going from left to right, you place a card. So you might place it in the middle. The next player can either place it to the left of your card or to the right of your card. And then once everybody's played their card for that round, you resolve from left to right. So you flip the you may not flip the first card over. The player who played that card, for example, let's say it was me, if I had the first card in the row, I can decide, do I want to reveal that card for its action, or I can place a token on it, and that gives me power or influence. And the winner of the game is the player with the most influence. So I might start to bank some influence, but there's a card that's an ambush card. So if somebody decides that they want to actually destroy that card that I've put influence on, it's an ambush card. I get points. They get nothing. So there's all this sort of risk-reward sort of thing. You can get cards that will take cards out of the row, all sorts of you know, different character abilities. It was a great, simple to play, really strategic, a bit of luck involved, but also, you know, a lot of take that. You'd have to play it with people you like.
Yeah, I think definitely playing with people. Like, we played it with strangers, but who did we play it, David?
Well, we actually played it with the Board Game Barbecue Crew. They do a podcast, and they taught us the game. Thank you to, I think it was Sarah who was playing with us.
Yep.
Possibly Adrian or one of the other guys played with us and taught us the game. So thank you very much for them for teaching this game. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, really good game. Maybe I shouldn't have, you know,
thrashed her
to the floor, but we'll learn that for next time.
So they said, look, if you can get 15 points, you're winning the game, right? So Dan gets 20 points, and I think the next closest was maybe 11.
11 or 12, yeah, like I think, yeah.
So thrashed everyone. So.
This is why we can't have nice things. The very reason we have no friends. very on brand. You just need to make sure. This is why you just need people who play directly against Daniel. Somebody has to sacrifice their own game just to make sure Daniel doesn't win. Then someone else is going to have a great time. how to play games with Daniel.
Actually, I had someone do that for me. He actually helped me and it was like, you've got the game now. And I was like, okay, I think I had it, but thanks.
He played one card. The very first card he played, I remember it well. He played a card called the Air. And if you're the only air in the row, you get, I think, is it 2 points every round?
Yeah, you get 2 points every round.
So every round he gets 2 points. And we just let him have it for about 3 rounds. So he's just...
Yeah. And like someone else was storing it. I think Sarah was storing it next to me. So when she flipped, yeah, she got 3 tokens from it and then stopped me from getting those 2 tokens per turn. But then, I can't remember his name, but the player that they were actually teaching the game to, he's just turned around and killed her heir. So I started getting 2 airs back. So someone else played an air, I think, like the next round to stop me, but...
by then he was already well and truly ahead.
6 to 8 points down and she gets 3 points for flipping over.
So, Callum, what games did you play?
So I decided to go... There was a little bit of things. So we played Castle Feud, which was a pretty simple game. I saw on Kickstarter a while ago, shooting catapults at castles. Hilariously fun. Just could never figure it belonging in my collection. But Steve and I decided to dedicate to the undeveloped or unfinished games. So that's where we went for most of the time. And one that sort of has a home in my heart is a game called Grimwald. Now, the creator was there with us explaining the game, and we played 2 rounds of it, and it's a game of 2 rounds. Imagine it is medieval times, and you may be a templar, a priest, what is my role of the card that I've left here? Is the commander, or a captain, and your job is to go on quests. So you've got 2 phases of the game. One phase is you spend your stamina and health to go on quests, and that will give you random rewards for doing things. Then the other part of your game is to spend all of your loot at town. So you may go on quests, you may be the first person out of town, which means you get to go first, and there your quest, you get pick of the run to do whatever you like. But then when you come back, when you're in town, you're actually last because you raced out of the gates to get to your quests, but that means you've spent more time on your quests and you get left behind, so you get less chance to get the cool stuff in town. So it's a bit of a balancing game there with skill points, experience, and stamina.
I thought you were going to say it's a bit of a balancing game of skill, and it's like...
Yeah, if I was skilled, man, I lost so hard. But we only played two rounds, and but I was chomping at the bit after those two rounds to go, okay, this is clicked. I'm in. And the other guys are like, we want to keep going. And I'm like, this is the first game I've played. You're right. I should probably keep going. But Steve and I were like, this is really interesting. And we were talking to Lee about it. And Lee's the designer of this game, of Grimwald. And he's saying, like, he's worked really hard on a bit of the iconography, a bit of the design, because of, he was found a lot of people who were coming to playtest the game were just like, oh, you need to fix this art. You need to fix this art. And he goes, this is not what the game is about. Give me feedback on the actual game I've developed. And some of the stuff we said was like, hey, the iconography can be difficult to start, but as soon as it clicks, it just sort of all of it links in and you can just get it. Like your player character, the commander, who I'm a big fan, and he was talking about some of his inspirations. They're not gender-specific characters. They're sort of, you could, your commander, for example, the artwork could be a male or a female, but the first ability is a grey locked point. So you need to spend your experience to go up levels, and I think at about third level you have this symbol that says like a grey lock, but it's unlocked. Didn't know what that meant when I was first playing, but about sixth level you have a blue one that unlocks. And so with the grey unlock, you're like, cool, oh, that's my another ability that I can take that's just for me, for my character. And then you're like, oh wait, the blue lock, that's exactly the same on my character, don't need to explain that, I get it already. So the iconography, spend a bit of time in. There's floating modifiers in the form of you get equipment. So he's got solid cubes for your abilities. So you can improve your abilities and they're your solid blue cubes. And then you may get like a shield. In town you buy a shield. And if you sell that, and that gets a clear cube in that specialized skill. So for instance, brawn, guile, and intelligence. So they're your skills. And yeah, so for instance, with your, you might have a shield that improves your brawn, which is great. But if you sell that shield or you get rid of that shield, you'll lose that cube because you're no longer having that equipment. You might get different equipment that gives you different skills, but it, because it's a clear cube, it's more of a floating modifier, and it's a really creative and I thought really inventive way to just sort of explore and explain. And it was just a lot of fun and I wanted to play more.
So do you, what do you know? When do you know it? Do you know its availability or do you know...
Yeah, really good question. We he has some information to share, and I'm sure we'll put some of it potentially on some of it as well. I know I'll put it on my socials, but he said it's not far from completion, but the game isn't finished yet because he's still got a bit more design artwork to go. He's deciding whether he splits his boards between the two stages. He said a couple months away at least, so not...
And I suppose that's going to be a good question for us in a future podcast, is probably around the use of things like DALL-E 2, artificial intelligence, in creating some of that artwork or things. So it'll be interesting. That will probably be something we can dive into in greater detail in another podcast.
Yeah, Dan and I spoke about this idea of having AI art and what's the role of an artist in this age where you can have AI and you just type in into the AI a commander and it creates an image for you of... a commander. So in that instance, you know, where is the artist in that? It's an AI computer. So, you know, we're having this debate and so it would be interesting to come and explore, I think, that in a little bit more detail.
That'd be good. Yeah.
Dan, tell us about the games that you demoed or took your interest.
Probably the one that I'll talk about is actually the Turing Machine. So this was a machine. This was a game that had punch cards, and you lay over three of those punch cards, which actually align to a number and color. And basically, you're trying to guess a three-digit code, and you then put that code through different tests, so you can actually kind of overlay your three onto a test, and then it will actually give you a result of does that test match your assumptions. And effectively, it's competitive code-breaking, I suppose, in as little turns as possible. So
effectively, you might get card 1, 2, and 3, And you were, and that card 1, 2, and 3 would reveal a little square.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a QR punch code kind of thing. Yeah. So
yeah, and then you have to place it against a test card, don't you? And you either get a true or false result. Is that right?
So yes and no. So effectively, you're all trying. You've got your own little scribe pad. They unfortunately ran out of scribe pads and they had like 400 or 500. So they went through them in terms of testing, which is good because obviously the game comes out in the next, like they're waiting on delivery of it. But yeah, you've actually got a box that has all of the numbers and colors, and everyone's sharing that box. And what you're doing on your little pad is gaining the clues and trying to do this deciphering. And then you're going to test that by grabbing the 3 cue cards that match the numbers and colors you're trying to test. And then in the middle of the board, you've actually got the 4 different tests, but you can only test against 3 of them. So for instance, a test could be, is purple the lowest number? Or
is it an odd or an even number?
Red odd or even, or things like that. So what you'd do is you'd pick up that test card and you'd put it behind, and because the punch card shows different things, it'll actually show you a tick or a cross. And that's going to say, is that test right or is it wrong? And you just rinse and repeat. So every time you do that with, you know, so you've got those 3 numbers, you do 3 of the 4 tests, you'd have the results, then you go back to the drawing board and you'll try and come up with another 3 numbers based on the information you've just gathered. And it's the person that can use the least amount of turns to get the number, obviously getting the number right. Person who has the least amount of guesses, to get it wins. If that's a tie, it is the person that had another metric, but we played cooperative. After that, I think it was just, you know, if they still tied from there, it was a tie. Yeah. So
we've played a number of logic games. I guess you'd describe it as a logic game, right?
Yeah, definitely a logic game, yeah.
We've played a couple of them. One I can think of is Cryptid. Another one was Search for Planet X. I'm not sure if you've played Search for Planet X.
I think it was that was a great game.
Yeah, fantastic.
How would it rate against something like those?
So I think it actually kind of stands apart from them because although it is... it's a cryptic game, you're not directly opposing someone else, so I can't block someone else from doing something. Cryptid or Search for Planet X, you're definitely interfering with each other, and you can feel that throughout the game, and that's great for those. With the code breaking, it kind of feels like you were Britain in the World War II, and Callum's the Allies. It's like, yeah, we're both trying to solve the code, but we don't actually really interfere with each other at all. So,
yeah, like it, for me, who only got to see the game, I didn't get to play it as much as you guys. It did make me feel like you were showing your age. It's like, this is what a computer's used to be. How cool are this? I used to push my punch card in, and it would give me a picture of Mickey Mouse. Wild. But I don't think I fully understood. I know it would be a very interesting and intriguing game in the same way.
I don't think it'll be for everyone. Absolutely not for everyone. But if you like problem solving, because it is, you know, you could play it solo perfectly fine. But yeah, it is definitely going to be, like, if you don't like problem solving or like chess or problem solving, then yeah, you're not going to like this. But for those that want that challenge and like that, like it's kind of like a morphed up Sudoku or something like that. So,
Decrypto is another game that comes to mind. It looked like it was in the same area. Would you compare these games?
So I think it kind of sits between like a Cryptid and a Decrypto. Like, funnily enough, Decrypto was literally right next to it on the testing table, and we've actually made a drink on Board Game Bar for Decrypto. I have Decrypto and I love Decrypto, but Decrypto is kind of more like, I would say Decrypto is like a mesh of this, of Turing Machine and Codenames. Yeah, because in Decrypto, you're trying to guess the other team's number based on the clues that they're giving to their team. So you're trying to intercept the codes and definitely that code name's adversarial. I'm trying to give my team clues without giving them too many clues, but we're trying to then intercept the other team's clues. Whereas Turing Machine is just like, no, I've got this problem, I need to solve it. Can I solve it quicker than everyone else?
Can you steal information?
No. That's a very short answer, but so it's basically you've got your pad and everyone else's. So it's very much a independent game, which normally I don't like. So it's actually quite unique that I like this one. Normally I don't like those kind of games that are wholly unique or independent.
Well, that's right. I was going to say, you're generally into games that are more social and involve the whole table. More so than those, I guess, solo multiplayer game experiences. So, yeah, I was interested to hear that you actually like this
one. And I think I like this because it's not trying to be any of those games, whereas, like, you look at what's a good example of a game that you're on your own.
Well, I think Wingspan's an example of that, where really you are on your own. You've got your own board.
Head down, bum up, and you kind of just, you're trying to do a problem, but you don't really interact or even look at the other players' boards. And I was like, that's, you know, for a game like that, which is a big game and it is a, you know, sprawling kind of game, you're still
stunningly beautiful game.
Stunningly beautiful, absolutely. But it is, well, and very... What's the word? What's the colour tone? It's like the tone.
Oh, like
pastel. Very pastel kind of theme. But you are just focused on your little thing. You're not really caring what anyone else is doing because it's like, they're doing what they're doing. So
this was our first time at PAX. My first time at PAX.
My first time at PAX.
This was my very first time as a guest at PAX. I've gone with...
Weird Flex.
Yeah, Weird Flex, I know. I've gone with some small companies that I used to work with in comic book shops as a exhibitioner. So it was a different, very different...
Oh, I can see you as an exhibitionist.
Yeah, exhibitionist. Just hanging in the wind. Woo! And it was a very different experience. I think it was a lot more enjoyable in this essence because I just got to hang out with a friend to play games, catch up with people, and then go back to whatever I wanted to do. Whereas an exhibition, you were sort of, you had an obligation or an interest in selling things. Like, I'm here to sell stuff to make money for the business.
And even if, because I've done that before as well, not in PAX, but in for like wine and things, even then when you're like off, you're still on. Like, you're still wearing the shirt or and you're walking around, you're trying to enjoy it, but then you end up naturally falling back into the, oh, I'm from here, like, you know, because they can see where you're from, so.
Yeah, and that element, I think, from that perspective, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and yeah. How about yourself?
Yeah, well, my very first experience with PAX, I guess first impressions weren't great in that we had a very, very long queue at the start of the day, that we probably waited for, 45 minutes in the queue?
Yeah, about that, yeah.
But that was Friday, it was day one, we got in there. Once we were in there, it was fine. It was great, you know. I was amazed at how much of the space it took up at the Melbourne Convention Centre.
Which is impressive because that's a big space.
It's a huge space, half of it dedicated to the digital video game stuff and obviously half of it to tabletop. I was really impressed. I would like, if I return next year, and we spoke about this a little bit earlier, telling my kids about it, they were really keen to go. So next year I might go with the kids, maybe for a day, and then return myself because I'd just love to sit there and just try out games and demo stuff and just sort of for that social aspect of it. So, yeah, definitely try it again next year.
And I think that's probably what I liked about it. We went, David and I went on Friday, and then I went back with the family and the GNA crew on Sunday. It was good. It was that social aspect. I got to be social both times, but, yeah.
I was just going to say the thing that I found, I was racing against time. With one day, as soon as somebody said this game's going to take an hour, I died a little inside. I was like, you know what? I'm not playing this for me. I'm playing this for you. And that's okay, but I've spent $70 to be at a convention to play a game for somebody else. It worked out well for me and then some in the end. But, I think there's parts of it that when you are going to be there for such a short period of time, even though it was 7 hours in the end because I was there all day on the Sunday, and the one thing I wanted to do, which was to play Blood on the Clock Tower, I never got around to doing. There was parts of me that wishes I'd gone. I think the Saturday day is like the party day as such because they go late into the night, and I'm sure the games
on Friday night they do as well. They go really late on Friday night as well.
And I didn't see much of the panels.
No, yeah. And I suppose that's where, first off, Blood on Clock Tower, we've got it and we're going to play it, so we're not going to miss out. But would you get a 3-day pass or even go multiple days?
I think I'd go two. I think they're making a weekend of it, a Saturday, Sunday, would probably be a really interesting, different perspective. I think playing I'd feel more comfortable. Like, there was 40 plus games of D&D going on. And when the 1 hour game was a role playing game, that I was gutted that I played for an hour because it felt like I was robbed of an hour. I'm sure I had a great time. Like, it was fine. But yeah, if I was there for 2 days, I'd be like, yeah, man, I'm happy to sit here for 4 hours and play D&D.
And that was when we were catching up, like, because we were obviously separated each time. You definitely played a lot more than I did. I was very particular. I wasn't really sitting down. I would you know, walk up and say, all right, what's the spiel? Like, I'm a content creator, so I know my games. So you can do a very quick one, but, you know, I'm not going to try and one, take up your time, but also, you know, spend all my time at one booth.
And that's it. I think there were things that I was stoked, like playing Castle Feud was the very first thing I did. I saw it there. I was like, yeah, this almost took serious money off me on a Kickstarter. And the guy was like, hey, you want to have a look at it? I'm like, yeah, shut up. I'm like, shut up and take my time, not my money. And he probably was like, well, there's nothing else to do, because everybody at that stage was still at digital and not at the tabletop area. And so Steve and I duked it out catapult style, throwing these little... We had a ball. And then, yeah, so just... Then he went and spent a bit of time painting a miniature, and he also got to a point where he's like, I'm not finished, but I don't have time to waste on this. Whereas I know that Kate and your family, on the flip side, they thoroughly enjoyed it because they could just ease into it, relax, and have a good time.
And that was their first time doing it as well. So that was actually their intro to painting. Even though I have everything and they could easily do that at home, there was a good 10 to 15 tables filled with probably, 20, 30 people each table painting for almost all the day. I don't think it was ever quiet.
There was never a time that there wasn't a line, and sometimes you had to wait half an hour in a line to paint, which is really a 45-minute activity.
Yeah, and they were... But that was kind of what they needed to get into that, because, you know... Dad having it at home, well, we've got it at home, and that's something nerdy that Dad has. So whereas actually seeing it at a convention and seeing all these people doing and loving it was like next level kind of, oh, okay, I could do that too. So
yeah, I'd love to make a weekend of it. It's definitely, I think maybe you take it for granted that it's in Melbourne, and this year it was in Melbourne, obviously, and so you know, it's in your home city. So I think if it was an interstate thing and you made a weekend of it and you went away and you stayed away and you had a hotel that was nearby and you didn't have other commitments to come back to and family to come back to, yeah, you could dedicate a whole weekend to it. And I reckon that in that sense, I'd sit there and probably happily be there all day, or come back, drop out, go to the hotel, have a break, come back later at night, jump into something.
And that's what I'm thinking next year. That's probably something I might actually do. You know, making, whether it's the whole family or whether it's just me for the first night and then they come up on the, you know, or even just on the Sunday or something like that. That could be something that, you know, we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. So that was PAX 2022 from Melbourne, our first experience. We had a great time. Thank you. That is episode 4 of the Afterthought podcast. Thank you very much to Callum and Daniel for their time today talking about PAX Melbourne. Thank you so much to Chris Bockie from No Box Games about his brand new game, Spies. Dan, where can we find our Games Night app crew on socials?
Yeah, so if you jump onto app.gamesnight.fun, we have all the links there, but we are on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on, I think we even have a TikTok now. So we are on all of them, but app.gamesnight.fun have all of those links for you. Make sure to also jump onto YouTube, where we have Games Night app, where we do teach videos and we plays. And we also have the Board Game Bar, where we make cocktails to pair with the games on your table.
Fantastic. So join us on a Wednesday evening Australian time on Twitch, where you can see us do live playthroughs and jump on and have a chat to us. Hope to see you there or hear from you there. Thank you again, and we'll be back with you shortly. Cheers.
Thanks.